All right, the actual physical exam, Manation. History, want to ask about chest pain. Why chest pain? Because chest pain may be a sign that the heart is having trouble. And what would be the number one reason for heart chest pain? As opposed to like stomach chest pain or heartburn. What is it that causes the heart to hurt? Say again? You have to speak up, because I've got nerve deafness here. Okay, the heart contracts, but it's contracting all the time. Well, what is it in a heart attack that causes the heart to hurt, though? But what about the heart attack? Say again? All right, it's not a measure of oxygen cut. What it is a measure of mismatch. Your heart wants a certain amount of oxygen. If it can't get that level of oxygen, it's going to have a cramp. It's going to hurt. So it's a measure of the amount of oxygen relative to the amount of oxygen demand or supply. So oxygen demand versus oxygen supply. That's what's going to cause the pain. Now, if it's acute chest pain, we call that acute chest pain. And chest pain is the general term for it is angina pectoris, meaning chest pain. Now we can have what we call stable and unstable. Stable angina pectoris is when a person exercises or exerts themselves and they raise their oxygen demand, they start getting chest pain. So if they take a nitroglycerin or if they rest, that will go away. So it's stable. It comes on when you exercise. It goes away when you rest or take a nitroglycerin tablet. Repeat after me. Stable. Happens when you exercise. Goes away with rest or nitroglycerin. Now, when we say exercise, we do not necessarily mean get on a treadmill or do jumping jacks. We just mean anything that raises heart rate or increases heart demand. Now, unstable angina happens at rest or does not go away with nitroglycerin or rest. Yes, ma'am.
How do you measure like acute pain? Like, how do you know if it's acute or
if it basically in the terms of chest pain, any pain that's not been already diagnosed and explained is going to be considered acute chest pain. So unstable angina is chest pain that happens at rest or doesn't go away with rest or nitroglycerin. Now, unstable angina is a medical emergency. Repeat after me. Unstable angina is a medical emergency. Unstable angina can lead to heart attacks. We'll talk about the difference between unstable angina and heart attacks next semester. But what you need to know for now is unstable angina is a medical emergency because it can lead to a heart attack. It's called referred pain, and for whatever reason, we're not 100% sure why, but sometimes the pain doesn't present in the chest. So sometimes it will be in the neck, sometimes it'll be down the left arm, sometimes it'll be in the back, sometimes it'll be on the other side, sometimes it'll be stomach pain. It's just the way your body works in perceiving pain. Remember, we're talking about the pain transmission and modulation. Some people don't feel any pain. So it just depends. All right. Next thing we're going to ask about is dyspnea. What is paroxysmal dyspnea? What is a paroxysm? It's a fit. Remember, we talked about Kramer? Yeah. It's like, yeah. It's a fit.
Can't breathe. It hurts.
Sudden shortness of breath. And if it happens at nighttime, might be a sign of fluid overload. Orthopnea, trouble breathing when a person lies down. Both paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea and orthopnea are both signs of fluid overload, and the number one cause is heart failure. Well, the three are heart, kidney, and liver failure. But in this case, we're talking about heart. Cough. Ask about any coughing up blood. Ask about frothy pink sputum. What would that be a sign of? Pulmonary edema. You're so good. Ask about fatigue. Do you feel tired? Ask about cyanosis and pallor. Do you ever look pale? Do you ever look bluish? Ask about any edema. Now, in terms of a patient reporting edema, where are they going to notice their edema if they're having heart problems? In the feet. Nocturia. What is nocturia? Going to the bathroom at night. Noct, night, uria, urine. Okay, ask about past cardiac history. So, have you ever had a heart attack? Do you have high blood pressure? Do you have high cholesterol? Have you ever had a heart murmur? Were you born with any heart defects? Have you ever had rheumatic fever? Have you ever had any valve problems? Do you have any diabetes? Family history. Does anyone in your family have? Personal habits. What's your eating like? Do you smoke? How much alcohol do you drink? Do you exercise? Do you take any drugs, recreational or prescription? Recreational drugs can destroy a person's heart. Cocaine can destroy a person's heart. So can amphetamines. All right, the physical exam. We're going to keep things fairly simple. We're going to inspect the chest. We're going to palpate the apical pulse. Though we can really skip that step. These two steps are optional. These three steps are optional. We are not going to do these things. They can be done, but we're not going to. So basically, we're going to inspect the chest. Then we're going to skip to auscultation. And we're going to do the rate, the rhythm, murmurs, and rubs. So what should the rhythm be? Bum bum, bum bum, bum bum, bum bum, bum bum bum, bum bum, bum bum, bum bum, bum bum, bum bum, bum bum. When you did pulse, what do we say rhythm was? Regular. It's going to be regular or irregular. Now, rate. What should the rate be? 60 to 100 for adults. And then any murmurs, gallops, or rubs. A friction rub will sound just like it does when a person breathes. So how do you tell the difference between a pleural rub and a heart friction rub? This is a tough one. How do you tell the difference between a pleural friction rub and a heart friction rub? No. Okay, and how would you isolate the difference between the heart and the lungs? Sometimes you can't tell by the location. What can we do with their breathing that we can't do with their heart? Ask them to stop. So you're going to ask the patient to hold their breath, and if it goes away when they hold their breath, guess what it is? If it goes away when they hold their breath, it's breathing. It's a pleural friction rub. If it doesn't go away when they hold their breath, then it's a heart. And it's the pericardium in this case, the sac that surrounds the heart. All right, so where do we auscultate? There are how many valves in the heart? Four. But we're going to listen in five places. The aorta we listen to on the right side of the chest. The pulmonic we listen to on the left side of the chest. We're going to listen in the middle. Then we're going to listen to the tricuspid and then bicuspid or mitral. So there's going to be five places where we're going to listen. That red dot is too far over. It should actually be here. So it's not past the nipple. It's right at the level of the nipple. Say again? Mitral. We already talked about what the different heart sounds mean. All right, heart failure findings. In a patient with heart failure, What are they going to get? What's the number one thing we said happens in heart failure? Fluid overload. The best way to detect fluid overload, what do you think it is? Say again? I think take their weight. You weigh them every day. If they get half a liter of extra fluid, what are they going to weigh? They're going to be 1 pound heavier. So remember, 1 kilogram of water equals, 1 liter of water equals 1 kilogram of water. So there's approximately 2.2 pounds in every kilogram. So every 1 pound of weight equals approximately half a liter of fluid. So what do? You weigh them every day. This is the best way to detect fluid overload early on. And how much does it cost to do that? A little bit of your time. Please don't be inconvenienced by taking good care of your patients. You'd be surprised how many nurses, I don't have time to weigh them. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's a pain. They can't get out of bed, or they had a surgery and you got to roll them over. Take weights on your patients who have heart failure. Blood pressure. Is blood pressure going to be higher or lower? It's going to be higher. Ironic, isn't it? The heart's having trouble pumping, and yet blood pressure is high. Why is it high? Okay, because it's trying harder, because you're also getting sympathetic response, which is causing vasoconstriction via what receptor? Alpha 1 receptors. Okay. Heart rate. Is heart rate going to be high or low? Heart rate is going to be high because of that sympathetic stimulation. Because of the fluid overload, they're going to have orthopnea or paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea. So they have trouble breathing when they lie down. So what do they stop doing? They stop lying down. So you ask them, do you have trouble breathing when you lie down? And they say, no. And they're being truthful, but it's a politician's truthful. Okay. So what they don't tell you is, I never lie down. Possibly have S3 sounds, gallop. Breath sounds would be crackles and dyspnea on exertion. Now, the New York Heart Association rates heart failure based on the amount of dyspnea on exertion on a scale of 1 to 4. So 1 is shortness of breath with large amounts of exertion. Stage 2 is shortness of breath with moderate amounts of exertion. Stage 3 is shortness of breath with very small amounts of exertion. We're talking like brushing your teeth or opening a can of dog food. I think that's what the old people eat these days. That's what they said on the news. They said Alpo is really good. And then stage 4, shortness of breath at rest. Okay, we're running out of time. Depends how far. So like stage 1 might be shortness of breath if you have to walk like 2 or 3 blocks. Stage 2 would be like you get tired going out to the mailbox. Stage 3 would be you get tired just walking around in your house. Getting up to go to the bathroom makes you tired and out of breath. And then stage 4 all the time.